We're kind of a couple things going on in Joe's life today. So first of all, it's Joe's birthday, which is fantastic. He turns 48 today, and so he is my senior by 3 months, and I will never forget that. Second of all, it's actually Joe's first day on the job here at Pine Grove. If you weren't here last night at the business meeting, Joe was approved as a part-time associate pastor. We tried to think of the longest title we could come up with for Joe, but we're grateful for that. And what we're going to do tonight, I kind of wanted to wrap up all of our counseling classes by having Joe up here answering some questions about counseling, but it's not limited to counseling. And in fact, I've got some questions that I've written down that I'll begin with, but also I would encourage any of you, if you got a question, Tanya's got a mic, Allie's got a mic, we can bring a mic to you. If you want to ask a question in the middle of what we're going to do, just raise your hand and blurt out. And we'll go as long as we got stuff to talk about, which you got two preachers up here. And ain't no telling what time we'll get out of here tonight. But I've got about, 7 or 8 questions. And then if you got some questions, and once we finish talking, we'll sing a song, do the prayer list, and go home. But I'm looking forward to this tonight. It's good for me not to be on the hot seat, although if you have a question for me, I'm always willing to answer your questions too. So let me get started by something that Joe hates to do, okay? This is true. Joe hates to do this. He didn't even know. I asked him if he wanted the questions ahead of time. I said, Joe, you want the questions? He said, no, don't give me the questions ahead of time. So I'm going to start with something he really doesn't want to do. Close. We're going to talk about him right quick. That's what we're going to do. Now, Joe, you have been teaching us to gather information, right? As we're discipling people, as we're counseling people, information is so helpful. So we're going to gather information about you right now, okay? And so the simple question is, what's the story of Joe Whiting? Give us a look into your childhood, into your life before Christ. Give us some insight into how you were saved. And then let's talk about Joe today.
Well, aside from the Lord, be ready to be very bored with anything about me. So what do you want, my testimony, I guess?
Something like that. Testimony? Yeah.
Well, I guess the shorthand version of that is I thought I was saved until I was 33 years old. I grew up in a quote-unquote Christian family, went to church as a child, and even in my teen years, and then when I got out on my own, all the restraints were gone from my parents, so I started to just do whatever I wanted to do and indulge in any kind of sin that I wanted and live that way until I was 33 and had made a real mess of my life, real wreck of things, although you couldn't tell by looking at me from the outside so much, but it really was bad, enslaved to various sins. And the Lord had really broken me down to where I realized that I couldn't fix the mess that I made in my life. And I remember it was 2007, March of 2007, that I just cried out to him and said, I can't stop doing these certain things, these sins. I need help. Will you please help me? Will you please free me from this? And I'll serve you. I'll live my life the way you want me to live my life. That was my prayer. I had limited theology, but I did know that I was stuck in sin, couldn't get out of it, which is where everyone is before salvation. You're a slave to sin. He answered that prayer immediately. And I know that because of the evidence, which started immediately and is going to this day, how I just started getting rid of various ways of thinking and actions of sinful actions that I was participating in for all my life. They just fell away. That day they started. And I remember it being so easy just to get rid of things that I could not get rid of before. And the Lord's been maturing me and growing me through various ways. He's chosen sickness and disability That's his preferred way, and that is the most effective way, or else he wouldn't have done that. So for me, that's what works the best. And then he brought Amy into my life in order to sanctify her, and he uses me to do that.
So that was 2007, yeah. Right? Did you know Amy at the time in 2007?
I did, and you're really leading. You know this story, don't you?
No, I don't. I don't. I'm interested.
Didn't we tell him?
I don't know. I forgot. You tell so many stories.
Okay.
Well, I can't keep up with the lies.
All right. I'll give the shorthand again, and everyone's sitting down, so that's fine, so no one's going to fall down. Yeah. So I met Amy in March of 2007. This is a perfect example of me telling you what happened, not what you should do. Okay, this is description, not prescription. Okay, so I met Amy on one of these online dating things. That's mistake number one. Not because there's something still wrong with her, but that's just a dumb thing to do. Met her on that. We went on our first date. Went great. We talked till they threw us out of the restaurant, I think. And 3 weeks later, we got married. So not a long engagement period, not a long dating period.
Ann and Allie, y'all can go upstairs. I think they got youth tonight, and so if you're going to hang out there.
And so the Lord had mercy on two fools making foolish decisions. And I was saved, I think, right before we got married. I thought Amy was saved right before we got married, but it turns out that she probably wasn't until about a month or two afterwards. About a month or two afterwards. Shortly thereafterwards, she was saved. And,
Well, excellent. Now, let's fast forward real quick just to give some people insight. And I don't know the answer to this question. Do you have siblings?
No.
No siblings?
My parents realized that they didn't want anything extra after me.
I was an only child, too, but it was the opposite. I was perfect, so how can you improve on that?
Okay.
2007... You are sometime after that, you decide to go to seminary in California. Can you just kind of tell us when it became evident that you wanted to be trained for ministry?
Okay, so I would say a couple of weeks after I got saved, the desire was there to go into ministry. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't even know what I didn't know. It was really bad. I was just a baby in the faith, but that desire was there. And it took a couple of years until one night I was talking on the phone with my uncle. He used to be my uncle. I still call him uncle. Anyways, and he was a believer years ago and saw me go through all this sinful stuff. And he asked me, if you could do it all over again, what would you do differently with your life? I think I was, how old was I then? 37, 38 years old? Right about that. So right about that. And I said, well, if I wasn't as old as I am now, I would go straight to seminary. I'd go straight to Master Seminary. I'd been listening to John MacArthur even before I was saved. I knew he had it right. I just didn't like it when he had it right and it pertained to me, so I would find ways around it. But anyways, I would go to seminary immediately. And then so Amy picked up on that, and I didn't know it, but she started researching Master Seminary and said, I think you ought to try this. And so in 2010... after the long application process, you know all about that, and after they review it and whatnot, I started distance learning. And I did two classes while we were living in Connecticut. And then in 2011, all along this time, by the way, at our home church, the pastor and pastors at the time there were mentoring us. We were there 4 or 5 days a week getting mentored, getting trained, getting taught. And having them observe our life and dig in, there was no area of our lives that were beyond questioning. And we wanted that, we invited that, because we wanted to know, one, am I really saved? I want to make sure, because it was 33 years of self-deception. And two, am I really called to the ministry? I need an outside objective source, not just a feeling. Are the qualifications there? So we had their blessing, and the seminary said, yes, we'll take you. But we're only going to approve you for 25 credits. So we packed up what we owned and moved out to California on the promise of 25 credits only. And they said, we'll let you know after that if we're going to let you keep going. And they did. And so I kept going.
Awesome. Yeah, y'all don't know this, but I sat in Theology 1 seminary class. You take four theology classes. Theology 1, Joe and I had the same class. Joe was always in the front row. I was always in the back row. True story. Joe is the only guy there, and it made more sense the longer I was there. All the other guys, you had to wear a button-up shirt and a tie to class. And so all of us wore shirts and ties. Joe was smart. He wore a short sleeve button-up shirt to class. I remember that clearly in your life.
It's hot. It's hot out there.
Is this dead? Okay. I'm just making sure. All right. Good stuff. Okay. So good. That's helpful to know.
Can I tell you a funny little story?
No. I'm running this show. No. Go ahead. Sure, funny
Something
story.
About Bud?
No, please don't.
I only have a couple of stories about Bud. I'll just tell you one. I remember Bud used to sit with his friend Butch in the back, and I always thought, wow, what a couple, Bud and Butch in the back. But always so kind to me when I walked in, though. Always said hi, but I just thought, what interesting, Bud and Butch. Okay, sounds like guys are going to beat you up for take your lunch money. But
Butch would have beaten you up. I promise he would have. Butch was from Alabama. So great guy. Great guy. We're still in touch with him. He didn't make it through seminary, but a great guy. All right. Question number two. All right. So now we're going to talk about biblical counseling a little bit. And that kind of leads in from seminary. So my question is, why does biblical counseling appeal to you? And I understand it appeals to everyone. We all should be counselors. But what really appealed to you about biblical counseling in terms of one-on-one counseling? And along with that, what gifts do you think the Lord gave you specifically to make you a good counselor? And then the third part is, was there any event or person in your life that really drew your interest into being a certified biblical counselor?
Okay, so I don't think there was any one person that drew me to wanting to be certified in counseling. I counseled for a number of years before I was certified. It's just that, and you know, we were taught in seminary how to do biblical counseling. So it's not that the training wasn't there already. It's that going through the process had its sharpening aspects, but it was more for the people that were coming to see me than it was for me. Because a lot of times people just want to see that piece of paper on the wall. It doesn't mean you can't do it without the piece of paper, but they want to see that. So I got it. That's what I did. That's why I did that. And you know, and additionally, also it puts me on their website and people can find me if they want to. They can look me up, whereas before they couldn't. I think the other part of that question is what drew me to that?
Yeah, what appeals to you about biblical counseling and any type of gifting you think that the Lord's given you uniquely just to kind of fit you for doing it?
I want to help people. And I want to help people love the Lord more and love others more. So it's not just a general I want to help people, but I want to see them love the Lord and others more, which is what biblical counseling is about. And I guess it just goes part and parcel with the way the Lord wired me, is I enjoy one-on-one or one-on-two more so, I think, than the pulpit. It's not that I don't enjoy the pulpit. It's not that it isn't a blessing. It's just I think I'm geared more for that and enjoy that more, that aspect more, that intimate aspect. And it's funny. It seems that the Lord has always crafted it or has always driven it to where people would seek me out and ask me what I thought about things. As a believer, you know, biblically, what do you think about this, theologically or whatever? It wasn't something that I went looking for or went digging for. It just kind of happened. And I guess in addition to that, before salvation largely, and a little bit in it, and certainly before ministry, you know, my job was working with people one-on-one anyways in a different industry. And so I have a lot of experience in that and how to converse with others and how to ingratiate yourself to others. So I think that's been helpful. I think that was training before ministry, of just being around people and helping people.
Good. No, it's a great answer. Great answer. By the way, say the word P-U-L-P-I-T. Say it.
Pulpit.
Pulpit. Okay. Joe, if you're going to be here at Pine Grove Baptist Church, it's a pulpit, son. You hear me? A pulpit.
Okay. P-U-L-L-P-I-T.
Something like that. Yeah, it ain't no pulpit. Anyway, no, it's great. Great answer. And I do, look, I've seen Joe one-on-one in a couple of counseling situations. He's fantastic, very kind, very gracious, but to the point. And you've taught me a lot about just one-on-one. It is certainly very, very important when you're counseling someone or discipling someone to be good one-on-one, and I think you do a great job. All right, question number three. Anybody got a question? They want to jump in? There's a mic out there.
If anybody it's a hard one, give it to Pastor Bud.
Yeah. Anybody got something they want to ask? We'll keep going until you do. All right. Now, talking about certified biblical counselors, having the document on the wall in the frame that says you're certified or you're on the website, and Joe's on the website to help people find him, and he's linked to Pine Grove Baptist Church, by the way. So I'm asking for a brief summary. If someone wanted to be a certified biblical counselor with ACBC, what does ACBC stand for?
Association of Certified Biblical Counselors.
Good. ACBC, not ACDC, which not most of y'all band. Listen to. Okay. I know what y'all listen to. This is ACBC. If somebody wants to be certified with them, just give us a quick rundown of what it takes to be certified with them.
Okay, I don't think it's changed much from when I did it. So you're gonna have to read about 2,000 pages of theology, which isn't all that much in the grand scheme of things. And they'll give you a list of books that you can read through that are approved. You will have you'll have about 10 hours, I think, of observation. So 10 hours of observing another certified counselor and seeing how things work, which is very helpful. Which, by the way, situation providing, I would love to have someone at some point come and sit in with me who's interested in learning how to counsel better, disciple better, because it is helpful to see how things work, to put things together. So anyways, you have the observation hours, you have the reading, then you have lecture hours. I believe there's 38 or 39 lecture hours that you will sit through, and that can be done remotely. Then there would be the 53 question quiz. You remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, we both took that. Those are 53 questions. They are all essay, and I believe you're limited to 2 pages per answer.
That's all they got from me, I promise. That's it. 2 pages. Next question.
So it'll be around 100 pages for your exam, and it'll be based on what you studied. And after that, you have a minimum. It's a minimum, which is what I went through. It's a minimum of 50 counseling sessions. In other words, you will have to counsel some people 50 times. Each one of those, well, a number of those will be recorded, audio. And then you will send that audio file to your supervisor. They'll listen to it and go over that with you and correct you where you need correction and encourage you where you need encouraging. And out of those 50 sessions, you have to counsel somebody at least 10 times without them quitting, meaning that you're making some kind of progress. And then there's some other prerequisites, I think a couple would be one of those prerequisites. I can't remember exactly. But that's basically those are the prerequisites. And then they may or may not approve you after those 50 hours, or they may say you need another 50 hours. It's up to them at that point.
But it can be done. You say that to say there's a need for certified biblical counselors?
There's a need, and especially for women counselors, there's a big need. And I would think if you devote yourself to that 6 months to a year, you could probably get that done.
How many certified biblical counselors with ACBC in our area? Just say Columbia, Midlands, any idea?
Do you remember? I think it was... So three or four of us in the immediate area.
Okay. Yeah, I knew there wasn't a lot.
Yeah, there's way, that's way more here than there was in where we were in South Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the prerequisites or what I was talking about? Coming. Yeah, prerequisite, yeah. When you're doing your 10 hours of observation, you could do it with a counselor that they approve of, or there is a DVD series that has some sessions recorded that you can watch and you will write down and give to them how many hours that you've watched of those. And those are very helpful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. In the one of the forms that they signed, the agreement form, if they read it, it is in there that that's a possibility that someone will be in there observing, or that I may video it, or that I may audio record it, or somebody else may. That's because it has to be done if someone's training for counseling. But regardless. If someone is really wanting help and really wanting to change, they're going to go for that. Yeah.
And I think that's a very important component of biblical counseling, that it requires people to do homework and show they have a true interest in wanting help. I think that separates biblical counseling. And I'll just tell you, we counseled somebody together and I observed, and they didn't want to do their work. And so guess what? No counseling. And that's the way it should be. There should be a desire to get help. And so that's great. Anyway, let's keep on going with this. I got a few more things. I'm going to switch gears in just a second. But give me a one-sentence summary of the purpose of biblical counseling. What is the purpose of biblical counseling?
Now I'm going to be repeating myself.
That's okay. No, it's fine. Repeat yourself.
Okay. To help others live according to their creative purpose, which is to glorify God by loving Him and loving others.
Okay, good, good. And then a question that kind of follows along those lines. For us here at Pine Grove, what does biblical counseling look like in a small church? And what does biblical counseling look like at Pine Grove Baptist Church? How should we think about biblical counseling? Should we advertise biblical counseling? Or if we are to advertise, how should we let people know that we do biblical counseling? What would you say separates when somebody says, I want counseling, you say, we're going to give you biblical counseling? How should we advertise that, say that, share that with the community?
Well, what separates it is that biblical counseling has the Bible as the authority. That's the separator. It is not my thoughts or opinions or desires. It is not psychology, which we've learned that. It's none of that stuff. It's none of the world's philosophies. It's the Bible. That's what separates it. The Bible is the authority. And the Bible used correctly is the authority. So that separates it. And what's different between a small church like this or a mega church? The number of people. That's it. The number of people, number of problems. So it's going to be done the same way, because biblical counseling is discipleship. And as believers, we're all called to disciple. We should just be discipling one another. That's life-on-life ministry, right?
Yeah.
And how should we advertise that? I guess depends on what the budget allows. But yeah. A sign would be great. Should we advertise that? Absolutely, because even if unbelievers show up for biblical counseling, I can't counsel them, but I can evangelize them, right? So we're having people come to us for evangelizing. That's the best case scenario.
Yes.
I don't have to go look for anybody. They just come in for free counseling. I evangelize.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it's great. And I would encourage y'all, tell folks, hey, we offer biblical counseling here at Pine Grove. I'm going to get like a t-shirt, you know, this we put John 3:16 and go, I'm just going to put biblical counseling, see Joe. And we're going to just advertise that way. But we are going to put it on our website. We do need to make it more well-known in our community, and we do need to certainly see it as a ministry of the church. All right, now, okay, here's the next question, and I'm interested in your response to this. I think I know what my answer would be, but that don't mean it'll be yours, but that's why I'm asking you. What is the biggest weakness in biblical counseling?
The biggest weakness in biblical counseling, it would be the biblical counselor would be the biggest weakness. It's not going to be the Bible.
Agreed. I agree with your answer. So, and I would say the same thing. Why is the counselor the biggest weakness? Or how could the counselor be the biggest weakness?
Well, there's a number of ways. One would be if he or she does not know the Bible, does not know how to use the Bible correctly, the way the Bible is intended to be used, would be one. And here's another one. We recently talked about this, lacking compassion for others. If you don't have compassion for others, don't bother trying to counsel them. You won't do it right. You'll drive them away. You won't be caring. If you can't reflect Christ, then don't try to do Christ's work. It's not going to work. So until you have compassion and real care for others, don't even bother. Be repenting. Bother repenting and asking the Lord to forgive you for that and to soften your heart for others.
Yeah, that's good. That's something that really has been impressed upon my heart, too. If you don't know Steve Lawson, you know Steve Lawson. Some of y'all know Steve Lawson. Great preacher. Steve Lawson had the three-step process of biblical counseling. What's your problem? That was question number one he would ask you. Question number two is, what does the Bible say? And question number three is, why are we still talking? And though I understand that mode of how to counsel someone, it's like, okay, here's your problem. Here's what the Bible says. All right, leave. That lacks compassion. Because what I realized in my own life, though I had access to the Bible and though I was a believer, it took me a long time, and I'm still putting things together in my own life, in my own theology. And so I think compassion is very, very important in biblical counseling. And I see that in your life, which is an encouragement to me and very helpful in my own life too. So that's great. Good answer.
I think of Christ, even when he looked at sinful Jerusalem, he wept over that?
Yes, yes.
There was compassion there? Compassion, and he wept over that?
And look, I'll say this to y'all. I live in the same world you live in. I see people with the same problems struggling for years in the same thing, and I understand the frustration of going, I don't get it, right? But there's also a point in which I'm glad the Lord didn't look at Bud Moss and say, why didn't he get it? Because I didn't get it for a very long time. And so, good. I approve that answer, Joe. Anyway, because I do think the counselor can be the biggest problem.
So I'm retaining my job.
I'm the standard,
on the first day.
Yes. I'm now the standard. All right, next question. Why is biblical counseling?
Oh, there's a question.
Oh, perfect. Yes, ma'am.
Sure. Yeah, great question.
Yeah.
So, just so it's on the recording to bear this out, is someone had went to Christian counseling, went three times and never went back because the counselor was too physical, too touchy. So what do you do when someone is hesitant to come to biblical counseling because of that history, right? Well, number one, start by listening to what they have to say and not minimizing that problem. That is a problem. That is scary. That would make you apprehensive about talking to somebody else, especially in this situation of a woman going to a man counselor, which, by the way, plug again for the importance of women counselors, because that would eliminate that issue immediately. Right? There would be no problem with that. So I've run into that before. So the easiest way to solve that is just bring your husband with you. bring your husband with you. That's great. I'd rather him be there. If you're not married, bring a friend with you. If you don't want to do that, then we'll get a godly lady from the church that will sit in with us. We'll have someone else there. As a matter of fact, if really, as a man counseling women, if the woman is anywhere close to my age range, I will not counsel them one-on-one. I won't do it. Just to avoid all appearance of evil, I can't be accused of anything if it's not possible to do, right? And neither can she. That's how I would do that. And you would feel comfortable with that, wouldn't you? Because that's the reasonable biblical thing to do.
Yeah, those are certainly, and Joe honors that. And, you know, we've made accommodations, especially in situations. He had a recent, somebody interested in counseling, he made it clear, you know, your husband needs to be here. And so that's always true. And so very grateful for that. All right, so here's what I'm going to do real quick, Joe. Got about 10 or 15 minutes left, and it just won't take that long, but I'm going to go through a list of counseling issues, right? These may be some issues that people are struggling with. We're going to assume they're believers, right? But they could be unbelievers. But I'm going to give you these issues, and your job is to give me a biblical response to them that would probably be very different from how a psychologist or a Christian counselor may answer or respond to these issues. That make sense?
So rapid fire questions, and I'm assuming that they are believers.
Yeah, they're believers. I mean, I think the main thing is, what would we say to counsel them differently than what the world, how the world would counsel them? That's kind of the contrast I want to draw. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay, so we'll start with an easy one. Anger.
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 Well, first, why are you angry? Would be a good place to start.
Okay.
What are the circumstances for the anger? And then when I find out what's going on, the circumstances, and why you're responding in anger, I would start working backwards from there to get to what's in the heart, because the anger is just a display of what's in the heart. The anger isn't the problem. You may have come for anger, and we will address that eventually, but I want to know why you're angry. I want to know what about this person, place, or thing is tempting you to be angry. And I also want you to understand that you are not to be driven by your emotions, right? We don't live by feelings and emotions. Anger is an emotion, okay? You aren't a puppet of your emotions. You control your emotions. You're just desiring to be angry. And see, people might think, well, I don't want to be angry. Well, then why have you done it for 30 years? If you don't like it, why have you done it for 30 years? You must like it. It must be a payoff somewhere, right?
How do you think the world would counsel somebody who's angry, generally speaking? What would people hear about anger?
Behavioral modification. Take it out on the punching bag. Vent by yourself when you get home. You know, just yell and scream and get it out, whereas Proverbs says, a man that gets full vent to his anger is a fool. Mm. So it's completely opposite. We're saying, no, that the anger is a byproduct of your thinking, and your thinking is because your heart is the way that it is. There's a problem in the heart. You have to get to that.
And this is a multifaceted issue, and I know there's a lot of variables here, but let's just talk about divorce. Mm-hmm. A couple comes in on the brink of divorce, right? What would be the difference you would counsel them in terms of what the world would probably counsel them? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The world would first go for the divorce aspect. But so what we have to do is we have to realize that divorce is the end product of something. It is not the beginning of something, it's the end product. In other words, for years and years or decades, you all have made decisions that have piled up and led up to this divorce situation that you're in, okay? So if I were to go straight for the divorce, I would miss all those years that you have made wrong decisions and done wrong things. So if I were to go for the divorce just period, I would be missing the mark. What I want to do is I want to go for each of their relationships with the Lord. So you think you're here because divorce is your problem. It's a problem, but it's not the problem. The problem is your relationship with the Lord. If you picture a triangle, okay, so on the bottom of the triangle, you have the husband here, the wife here, and Christ up top, okay? And they're very separated at the bottom. They're on those those angles of the triangle there. What I don't want to do is try to bring them together first. What's the problem if I take the ends of those triangles and bring them together, the husband and wife together? What's the problem there? Anybody see the problem with that? Yeah, missing the Lord. They're still down here. He's still way up here. So what I want to do is move them both up towards the Lord. And as I do that, increase their relationship, correct their relationship with the Lord, they both will grow closer together in the best case scenario. Okay, there are scenarios where one spouse will say, okay, I get that. I'm moving towards the Lord, right? I'm repenting. I'm living a sanctified life. And the other spouse doesn't like that. So what happens? They get further apart still. And the divorce happens anyways. And it gets even nastier than what it was. So if you come in and and the result that you want is a fixed marriage, you're looking for the wrong result, you could very well be disappointed. But if you come in and you understand what you need is a fixed relationship with Christ, whether salvation or sanctification, yes, a broken marriage will still hurt, but it's not going to be the same thing as if that marriage was your end goal. Christ is your end goal. And that may help your marriage, or that may flush it right down the toilet real fast. I've seen it both ways.
Good.
Is that helpful?
Yeah.
All right, so if they're not believers, it's evangelism right away. Okay, it's evangelism right away. Maybe I give them a couple of practical helps just to kind of squelch the fire, so to speak. But what I don't want to do is I don't want to make them comfortable in their marriage while they're on their way to hell. Why would I want to do that? Okay, because now our marriage is a lot better because of all these practical helps we've gotten. So our life's a lot better. Oh, we don't need the Lord. Well, yes, you do. You're just more comfortable on your way to hell. I don't want to do that. Yeah, I'm not going to help you very much at all. I'll give you some practical helps in your marriage, but not a whole lot. I want to be evangelizing you. I want you to understand that if you die before you get home tonight, you are going to be in eternal judgment. A lot worse than a bad marriage. Yep.
Good. Good. All right, next one. An abusive spouse, physically abusive spouse. How would you handle a counseling case if a woman, I guess, or even a man came in and said, my spouse is physically abusive? What would you want to do to respond to that?
Yeah, boy, what a loaded question. Okay, so there's a couple different things you have to do. One, look, there's law enforcement for a reason, right? Someone's getting physical with someone else, husband's beating up his wife, wife's hitting the husband with a frying pan, whatever it is.
Tanya, you can go upstairs too. They've got another class for wives.
Hey, I know of a wife that would throw knives and kitchen appliances and pots and pans at her husband, and they'd stick in the wall, and he'd duck and all kinds of stuff like that. So, I mean, it goes both ways.
Yeah, I can understand that.
So the immediate issue, get law enforcement involved, okay? What I would not do, for instance, with the wife, and this is where the church has to come in, with the wife, is I would not advise her to go to what the state provides for battered women, shelters for battered women, because the objective there at that shelter is to get you away from your husband for good, right? Well, okay, that may not be biblical. It may not be biblical. There may be reconciliation there as well. I don't know, but what we would want to do as a church is have someone take her in, her and her children in, until this blows over, and then counsel her on how to handle this biblically while he sits in jail or whatever he's got to do. And talk with him as much as you can. But there are consequences to action. to actions, and the Word has set up law enforcement for that.
Good, good. Now, that's a difficult situation, too. And the church does need to step in and step up to the plate, mm-hmm. because it's important to provide the help that people need in that regard. All right, just a couple more, and then I got one last question. So a couple more issues, just thinking about how biblical counseling contrasts with the world. We talked about this a number of times, but just a good summary statement on forgiveness. Somebody comes in, is withholding forgiveness, says they can't forgive somebody in their past, can't forgive some issue, some adult, maybe in their childhood, just a lack of forgiveness. In a believer, we're talking about, right? This would be, I think, a very important situation. So what would the counsel look like in that situation?
What would the counsel look like?
Compared to the world's counsel, if they were to hear from the world about forgiveness.
Yeah, so, look, so with the world, there's approximately 300 different counseling models, okay? And we saw this months ago, and none of those agree on how you are to change from what you are to what they want you to be, and not necessarily do they agree on what they want you to be either. Mm-hmm. So you could get any kind of nonsensical answer with that. That would range anything from improving your self-esteem to just cutting that person off in your life, to some sort of revenge, not illegal, but some kind of personal revenge, you know, to get it out, get your pound of flesh. But I think immediately of Mark 11 and verse 25, and it says, whenever you stand praying, forgive. If you have anything against anyone, anything against anyone, there are no loopholes there, so that your Father also who is in heaven may forgive you your transgressions. Forgive anything for anyone, and if you don't, that's evidence that you haven't been forgiven, because you don't understand forgiveness. Your lack of forgiveness for others is because you don't understand how sinful you are. You think because this person hurt my feelings or did something against me that I have the right to be unforgiving. Well, what about the Lord's rights over you? Didn't he have to die on a cross and suffer punishment by men and by the Father because of your sin? That's a whole lot worse than whatever the person did to you.
Good.
Yeah, have some humility. Forgive the other person.
Good, and then completely changing gears. The last one, what about if someone comes in and they're abusing some substance, prescription medication, painkillers, alcohol, illegal drugs, okay? They come maybe unwillingly to see you. Maybe their family's like, okay, we're going to get you counseling, and Joe Whiting is going to help you. How does that look in terms of them sobering up? Would you want them to go to a facility, even though they may get horrible counsel at a facility to get sober? Or how would you handle that in terms of trying to counsel that person?
Boy, that would be situation. That would be case by case, wouldn't it? Uh-huh. It depends how bad it is. I mean, some drugs you cannot safely come off of without medical intervention. So, again, it's case by case there. Yes, they may get horrible counsel. I can warn them about that. But if they're coming, if they've been forced to come to see me anyways, they don't want to hear a whole lot of what I have to say. You could go so many different ways with that. You could say, hey, I'm going to give them the gospel, and you probably should, and I probably would. But not necessarily am I going to hammer them about the drugs they're on, because they're looking for me to hammer them about the drugs that they're on. You may need to go get some medical help, and we'll talk afterwards. And I'll come visit you if I can. I'll come visit you where you are. But I'm assuming if someone is quote unquote a drug addict, I'm questioning their salvation.
Sure.
Yep. You know, yep. I would have to start there.
Yeah. That's good. All right, last question. Oh, you got a question? Yeah, go. Yeah, you good.
Strongly encouraged to be counseled, whether it be spouse, Come on in.
Sure. Yeah, if you're forced by your family, just come on in. I'll start working with them and we'll see what the Lord does. Because the Lord's hands aren't tied because the other person doesn't want to. There are so many people that come in that are Christian, so many people that come in that claim to be Christian, that after they're there for a couple hours or a couple sessions, they don't want to be there. And why is that? Well, because I'm confronting the sin. You say you want help, but you don't realize what your problem is. So I start confronting the problem you don't realize you have. You don't like it, and you don't want to be there. So that's the same thing, technically. I mean, they don't want to be there. But come on in. Let me talk with you, and we'll see what the Lord does. I don't have any power, but the Word does. So you're going to be sitting in front of the Word. And Romans chapter 2 says, I have a help in the heart of man is written the law of God, right? So they're going to know what I'm saying is true, even if they don't want to be there. They may not like it, but they know it's going to be true. They know that from me they are getting the truth, and that counts for a lot in our age of lying and deception.
Speaking of lying and deception, thank you, Joe. Just plain. Now, I do appreciate you being here and making yourself available to the church. Last question, and this is a loaded question too, but I just interested. And I'll give mine first. So one of my favorite passages in the Bible, Matthew 7, 13 and 14. The Lord used that passage, and it's part of saving me. Narrow way, broad way was like so clear to me as an unbeliever. Coming to Christ, it was just a verse that was just etched in my mind. I can't wait to preach it. I hadn't gone through the Gospel of Matthew yet. But what verse sticks out to Joe Whiting in your life? Is there anything that kind of comes to mind? Okay, good. Perfect.
Yeah, it was just a few verses down from that. And I'm not kidding. It was Matthew 7, and it was 21 through 23. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord. That was huge for me. That was transformational.
Because you thought you were saved.
Right. That was very scary to me for a number of years.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Excellent. Good answer. Any other questions? We got a few moments. Yes.
Here's a personal question, Joe. Tonight, you had your spell.
The night I had my spell. For those of you who don't know.
A witch cast a spell on Joe right here in this front row. No, I'm just playing.
What was I thinking? Well, I didn't know it, but that night, my spell was that my aorta burst in half from the root all the way down into my abdomen, and I started bleeding internally. So by spell, that's what you mean. What's that? No. So as I was dying here...
let me jump in. So Joe, prior to that night, I was going upstairs to help the youth, and Joe... I don't know if that's your first time standing up to teach the church.
Yes, it was.
Okay, well, Joe had warned me, okay, you know, and I'm not betraying your, I hope not betraying you, but he said, look, there's times I get up to preach, heart starts racing, there's a response, you know, that I just, it's just really difficult for me at times. Is this true, right? He kind of told me that, prepared me for that, and so, they come get me from upstairs, bring me down here. Joe's laid out with Miss Tommy. Praise the Lord, Miss Tommy's here. You know, I don't know if she did anything, but it made us all feel better. So
that's anyway. The night I met Miss Tommy.
Yeah, I know. It's like, hey, I'm Joe. I'm Miss Tommy. And so Joe sprawled out, you know, and I come up to Joe, and I'm trying to be pastoral. I'm like, Joe, is this just one of those times, you know, where your heart's, no, this is not that. This is not that. You know, it's like, I want to make it very clear, but it's not that. So. I still remember being in the emergency room with you that night, and I'm like, Joe, no, this is not that. And, like, if I realized how serious it was, I wouldn't even have been in the emergency room with him. It was very serious, but I just thought, I'll calm him down. Not quite. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, but it was one of those times in my life I'll never forget either. So
the night I met Miss Tommy was laying my head in her lap.
Speaking of touchy-feely, nice to meet you, Miss Tommy. I'm a biblical counselor.
Yeah. What was I thinking? I didn't, well, at first I thought, my heart was racing beforehand, and I guess that's because it was trying to pump blood, and the blood wasn't going where it was supposed to go. And I thought, well, it'll calm down. It usually does. And it didn't. And I started getting really dizzy. Then I started losing breath and thinking, what's going on here? I don't know what's going on. So I figured I'd go sit down for a second and see if I could catch my breath. And that turned into, well, I need to lay down now. And that turned into, I'm going to pass out real soon. And does anybody here know what to do if I pass out and start vomiting? That's a possibility. That's when I asked someone to get me a bunch of sugar to try and keep me awake. And it did. So I didn't know what was going on. I get to the hospital. I blacked out a few times in and out on the way to the hospital. I don't remember a whole lot, honestly. I remember them trying to give me anti-anxiety medication, and that aggravated me because I knew I wasn't anxious. I was hurting. I had pain. I don't want anti-anxiety medication. And so I asked them. They said the name of it. I can't remember what it was. And I told the nurse, I'm not anxious. I'm in pain, but if you don't give me something for this pain, I will become anxious. So please give me something for this pain. And the next thing I remember is seeing the surgeon, and he told me, you have 2 hours to live unless you get the operation. And I said, well, then let's get the operation. And I don't remember much more after that. I just didn't know what was going on. I prayed several times because I didn't know what was happening. And the Lord answered my prayer, and now you guys are stuck with me for a little bit longer anyways. I don't remember any of that. Yeah. Six months.
And I just think about how God had all that sorted, that because if we had not had her number, if someone hadn't had your number, I don't know how we would have gotten you, you know.
That would be a great slogan for Pine Grove. If you feel like your aorta is going to rupture, come fellowship with us. Right? You know what I mean? I mean, it's great. You could almost die here, right?
And so, or like people are dying to fill the pulpit.
Yeah, but yeah. That's pretty good. But Candace is right. This is what I think about. I think about how the Lord brought you to Lexington, brought you to Pine Grove for that specific night out in the middle of nowhere. You could have been anywhere in the world, and yet the Lord's timing was absolutely perfect, as it always is. Mm-hmm. And so great, great thought, Candace, for sure. Sorry, Glenn.
I've come to understand that. Since then, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, God had that all planned out. Yeah. Well, he did, yeah. I don't know. Amy says no. There's so much that I do not remember from that night and just a few, you know, and the number of days after that. I think there was just so many drugs, I just don't remember a whole lot.
Yeah, good. Yes. Sure.
So do you or any other biblical counselor, and I know you can't speak specifically, but encourage or even involve yourself with like remote counseling, telephone,
it is, it's an option. It's not the best option, but sometimes it's the only option. So if it's the only option, then I'll take it. And the Lord rewards faithfulness, right? So I'll just be faithful with the opportunity that I have.
Yep, we did. And when some folks we counseled, we did a Zoom session with them. And it wasn't the best, but it was an option, and it worked for us for while that was going on. So it's good. Good thought for sure. Anything else?
You were talking about substance abuse. Are there Christian resources, references, people
That's a great word. It's very biblical, I think.
Yeah, wacky. I don't know this area that well. Are there resources out there in general? Yes. Yes, there are. I don't know them off the top of my head. I remember through the years knowing certain names and just having forgotten them because I haven't dealt with anybody in so long that's had substance abuse, but there are resources out there.
It's really hard to find one. Yeah, we had a situation prior to my time at Pine Grove. There's a place in Greenwood, used to be called Faith Home, that was loosely Christian-based drug and alcohol, prescription drug kind of a place to go to get sober that had fairly decent teaching. It's kind of hard to qualify, but it is something. But I'm telling you what, it's very, very hard to find those places. If y'all know of those places, let us... Please share them with me. We'll research them because there will be a situation where we need to reference somebody to a place like that. That's going to come.
Yeah, I don't want to send anybody to Alcoholics Anonymous whatever Anonymous. Right. Yeah. That's horrible.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a tough one. And you know, that's a great ministry, honestly. There's a real need for those places because that's what I was trying to pull out of Joe, and I think he said it well. There's a time and a place where you can't counsel someone until you can look them in the eye and they're sober, literally. And so that's a, you know, I'm sure there's a need. I'm not familiar with those places in the Midlands, but that's Greenwood, and that's not too far from here, but there may be others. If you know one, please come see me or Joe. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Y'all have listened and been patient. I hope this is helpful. I love Q&As. I listen to a lot of Q&As because you get stuff you don't hear in a sermon or a time. So thank you for doing this. Grateful.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll do it again, and roles will be reversed. And maybe you can ask me some stuff that I don't know the answer to. And so what we're going to do, I got a quick run down to the prayer list, and then we're going to sing a song. So a couple names, Melissa Collins.